I'm here with Miguel Figueroa of the Communist Party of Canada. How are you doing today, Miguel?
Very well, thanks.
Good. Let's start with some of the highlights of the Communist Party's platform.
Well, you know, we've more or less dubbed our platform a platform for peace, for jobs, for sovereignty, and for democracy. Because we think that those are very critical issues in this election, and unfortunately are getting kind of short shrift during this election campaign. Many of the most critical issues facing the country aren't really being debated as they should be in the democratic process. Issues relating to the deindustrialization of our country, thousands and thousands of jobs and key industries in pulp and paper, in steel, in auto, in the pharmaceutical industry, are being eliminated. They're being outsourced, and lots of people are being laid off across the country. Other jobs are being produced, but we need to look at it both in a not just a quantitative sense, but a qualitative sense. These jobs are very often in the service industry. They're part-time, temporary, and precarious kinds of employment, and they're low-wage jobs. And in many respects, this is a vital concern, not only for those people and those families affected, those communities affected, but in fact, in terms of the overall development of the Canadian economy and the loss of value-producing sectors of the economy, which is, after all, the source of wealth. So we think that's an important issue. We think the question of Canadian sovereignty and the erosion of Canadian sovereignty is a big issue. I think more and more people are sensitized to what's wrong with the NAFTA agreement that Canada is currently part of, the fact that it's inequitable, that it's unfair, and that the United States really wants to suck and blow at the same time. They want access to our resources, to our markets, to our labor power, and they want the freedom to be able to move their capital in and out of Canada at will, completely unfettered and untaxed. But on the other hand, boy, when it affects the interests of American business, the walls go up, and we've seen that in softwood lumber, but we saw it on steel, we saw it on PEI potatoes, and a whole range of other issues. And it calls into question whether Canada should continue to stay in the NAFTA agreement. We see in Latin America, for instance, more and more people, I mean, in terms of a majority of Latin Americans, are turning away from this free trade recipe, which is pro-corporate, you know, the free trade area in the Americas. It's extremely unpopular throughout Latin America, and not without reason. And we think that there needs to be a real serious debate in Canada about what kind of trade, what kind of environmental policies, social policies, and so on that we should have, and then to look at the NAFTA agreement and be quite honest and straightforward about it. The NAFTA agreement is like a straitjacket on our country. It's a one-way street, which is helping to propel this attack on the public sector, on our universal health care system, on accessible post-secondary education, in terms of environmental law, in terms of health and safety regulations and other forms of labor legislation, in terms of a whole number of aspects. It is leading us inextricably towards this harmonization with the United States. And really what it comes down to is integration into and subordination of Canada into Fortress America. That's a big issue for a lot of Canadians, but most of the parties are ducking that question. They're not really seriously addressing it. We think that there's big issues and related issues in foreign policy, like what Canada's doing in Afghanistan today. I mean, in fact, the Canadian mission to Afghanistan is not just peacekeeping in the traditional sense. On the contrary, it's acting as a very aggressive occupying power. It's got search and destroy missions. We're going to be increasing military personnel there to you know, to search out and attack the so-called resistance in Afghanistan. I mean, really, it's becoming quite a quagmire for Canada. And yet there is no serious discussion in this election campaign whether or not we need to fundamentally rethink our position in Afghanistan. And of course, there's other issues too, like the question of energy and oil and gas. I mean, the big oil monopolies based in Alberta, but also they're part of Canadian big business as a whole, are making windfall profits obscene levels of profits in the billions and tens of billions of dollars, and it's coming out of the pockets of ordinary citizens. It's coming out of your pocket and my pocket in terms of higher rates at the gas pump, in terms of heating oil and natural gas for people to heat their homes in the winter. And nothing is being said about this. I mean, it is one of the biggest rip-offs that we've seen in the past decade or two in this country, and the fact of the matter is that the big business parties really don't want to challenge it for two reasons. One is because they have a pro-corporate approach to start with, and secondly, because there are some taxes that are then going into the public coffers. Our view, however, is that it's an irresponsible attitude, because first of all, this is a non-renewable resource. We need to have a long-term perspective of what's in the best interest of Canada and the Canadian people in terms of shepherding that resource, and also in terms of the impact that high prices have, especially on working people and poor people, single parents in this country, and so on. We need to do a number of things on energy. We need to have an emergency cap on prices and a rollback of domestic prices. We need to impose a windfall profit tax on the big corporations. And in the longer run, we have to move towards nationalizing the oil and gas industry of this country. It's not a pie-in-the-sky idea. I mean, in Venezuela, in Mexico, the oil and gas industry is publicly owned. In Bolivia, they just had recent elections in Bolivia. People there and the new government there is going to be moving towards nationalizing oil and gas. And there's absolutely no reason in the world why we shouldn't do that in Canada as well. So these are some of the issues that we're trying to address. There's a whole number of issues. There's issues dealing with democratic rights and the so-called national security mentality, the Bill C-36, the Anti-Terrorism Act, is a very serious incursion on democratic rights. And once again, these issues are not being debated. And what's being debated are kind of like wedge issues like gun control and youth crime or issues dealing with corruption. I mean, there is a problem with corruption. There is a problem with youth crime. And, of course, the Communist Party also has its own take on that. But the fact of the matter is that vital interests that affect the long-term future of this country are not being debated. And in fact, the main big business parties have their own, they have their agenda in all of these areas, but they are concealing them. They are disguising them. They don't want to talk about them precisely because they know that that they're out of sync with how a lot of Canadians feel.
Okay. Thank you, Miguel. Those are some of the major issues from the Communist Party of Canada, but I wanted to talk more specifically about, let's go first with First Nations issues in Canada.
Right. Well, the view of our party, of course, is that the first crime committed on Canadian soil, even predating Confederation, was, of course, the pillaging and stealing of lands and resources of the Aboriginal people, peoples in this country. It's never been adequately addressed. The Aboriginal peoples have a fundamental national right to not only to self-government, but to self-determination. And we think that that needs to be reflected in a new constitution. It's not just a question of throwing money at the problem, although a lot of resources need to be addressed to the problem of lack of jobs, lack of education and access to education, the social conditions, the housing, lack of adequate housing for Aboriginal peoples, both in their traditional areas and on reserves, but also those who are living outside of reserves. That's a fundamental issue, a fundamental democratic right, which hasn't been addressed by the large parties, and our party feels very strongly about that.
Okay, what about post-secondary education? Does the Communist Party have a stance on accessibility?
We do. We are very strong advocates and have been for decades of the demand for expansion of universal accessibility to post-secondary education. We think education is a right. It's not a privilege. It shouldn't be based on the ability to pay. You cannot improve accessibility simply by building new facilities or having more student loan programs. Really, you have to address the fundamental costs of education, not only to students themselves, but also to parents and relatives. And the fact is that tuitions have skyrocketed across this country in the past dozen years. And that has a real impact on the ability of working class youth, particularly, to get a post-secondary education. And if they do go on after high school, they are essentially forced, because of these economic pressures, to be streamed into technical programs and so on, and as opposed to seeking university degrees and what have you. So issues relating to student employment and the low wages that students get. I mean, all these things are part of the larger picture. When wages are low for young people, when housing comes a big problem and a cost for youth trying to continue their education, and when basic tuition, books, and various other charges are added up, all of these things militate against accessibility. We think that Canada is a very wealthy country. It's a very rich country in terms of resources, and certainly in terms of capital accumulation. We have the means. If a country like Mexico can offer free post-secondary education to their youth, why can't Canada? We certainly can afford it, and we think that it's really an investment in the future of the country. There's another aspect to this as well. As federal governments and provincial governments have consecutively and together cut back resources to post-secondary education, it's created a crisis, not only in terms of increasing tuition, but also because university administrations then go to the so-called private sector for increased funding. And that is leading to the corporatization of post-secondary education. I mean, Simon Fraser is a good example of it, but it's happening on campuses right across the country, where corporations are not just donating money, they are in fact becoming partners in the orientation of research, in terms of the curriculum and the programs that are being stressed by big business, because they serve corporate interests, as opposed to other programs which maybe aren't as pro corporate in their orientation or in their utility to big business. And that's a big problem as well. I mean, we talk a lot about an abstract about things like academic freedom and whatnot, but when you have increasing corporatization of post-secondary education, especially at the university and postgraduate level, this negates really the essence. What it does is it impairs the conditions within which academic freedom can really develop.
What is the Communist Party's stance on healthcare in Canada?
Well, again, we think that health and universal access to comprehensive medical services is a fundamental right of Canadians and shouldn't be based on their ability to pay. The vast majority of Canadians agree. As a matter of fact, when the Romano Commission completed their report on the state of the healthcare system in Canada, in which they called for an end to privatizing the healthcare system, which has been nickel and dimed, all over the place, increased user fees, increased or decreases in terms of the listing of services that are available, and so on, privatizing of various things like lab work, and now they're moving even towards privatizing hospitals or setting up these private partnership P3 arrangements for hospitals. All of these things were severely criticized in the Romano Commission. And at the time that the commission report came out in 2003, there were numerous polls that were taken that showed that more than 80% of Canadians agreed with the Romano Commission. They opposed two-tier healthcare. They opposed the privatization of our medical system. And yet, despite all that and all of that, the system is being continually eroded. And the latest development with the Supreme Court decision on the Ciaulli case has really opened up the floodgates to the emergence of a two-tier health system. And we think that this would be a monumental setback for our country. We think that what's required is for Parliament in the first place to rigorously enforce the Canada Health Act, to substantially increase federal funding for healthcare, which has been cut back under the Paul Martin when he was the finance minister. He was really initiated these massive cutbacks of federal funding for healthcare. and in fact, we need to explicitly write in our constitution and in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and in a very explicit way, make healthcare and access to health services a fundamental right for all Canadians.
Okay. What about your party's stance on the Kyoto Protocol and environmental issues in general?
Well, you know, at the time, not only our party, but a whole range of environmental organizations around the world looked at the Kyoto Protocol or treaty as being really the very first step in the process of reversing the rapid increases in gas emissions, you know, that are affecting global warming and so on and so forth. In fact, the thresholds or the targets that were set for reductions in CO2 emissions were really quite partial, quite piecemeal. That said, it nonetheless was the first time that there was an international agreement with respect to that. Canada signed that agreement. Canada and the Canadian government continues to say that they support Kyoto. But the fact is that Canada has been moving in the opposite direction, and it's looking now as if it's going to be very difficult to meet those targets. And we think that it can be done, but that would imply making some very hard decisions by coming down on the auto industry to make it very explicit that if they want to sell their vehicles in our country, in our market, they have to meet very strict emission controls, and those have to be, and the wherewithal technologically does exist to do that, but the political will is absent, and it's primarily because governments are placing the question of the environment in such a light that says, well, yes, we support the environment, but jobs come first. Economic activity comes first. And we think this is not only a short-sighted approach, but ultimately a self-defeating approach. And I think more and more Canadians are realizing that, and that, in fact, it makes sense in terms of the development of our country to end not only those kinds of environmental abuses, but things like clear-cutting of our forests and things like fouling of our water supplies and so on and so forth. So here again, I think that the mainstream parties, and particularly the parties of big business, the Tories and the Liberals, lag far behind the consciousness of ordinary Canadians on these issues. And in fact, they're trying to obscure their anti-environmental policy. They're trying to appear to be green or to be pro-environmental, when in fact they see this as an obstacle to the interests of big business and making money.
Thanks, Miguel. Does the Communist Party support electoral reform at all? And if so, how?
Oh, yes. Well, once again, I mean, our party has a long history of advocating reform. For instance, proportional representation. Our party was the first party in this country to advocate proportional representation. Not that PR in and of itself will democratize or solve the problems of what's wrong with the so-called democratic process in this country, but it would be a start. Right now, with the first-past-the-post system, people really don't vote for what they want. They vote for the least of what they don't want. They're herded, in many respects, into supporting one or another option because otherwise their votes won't count. So, in a certain sense, proportional representation would be a very important reform, and our party has long advocated that. But we've called for a number of other reforms as well, for instance, the right of recall and so on. There's another aspect to this question as well. The electoral system, not only the specific regulations, but also the funding of parties, the access to the media, both during elections and between elections, all of these things are stacked very heavily against smaller parties, parties that don't have big bank accounts, that aren't bankrolled by big corporations or big money, grassroots parties, alternative parties. The system as a whole, and again, it has to be seen in the larger sense, because it has to do also with the way that the mainstream corporate media approaches the question of politics in this country. All of these things together militate against not only smaller parties, but against the democratic right of Canadians to know the views of all of the diverse political forces in the country, and to make up their own minds as to whether, well, that's an interesting point of view. I'd like to hear some more from the Communist Party, or I'd like to hear more from the Green Party, or so on and so forth. That's not by accident. It's because the large established parties really do want to maintain their hegemony. They want to maintain their monopoly. They don't really want to have a level playing field. That, too, is part of democracy. But there's an even more fundamental question, and that is this. People are very cynical about elections and about politics in this country because, and not, by the way, without reason. They have every right to be cynical about it because for far too long, parties will make promises and they will break those promises when in office. They will actually come out and lie to the Canadian people and deceive them in terms of what their real agenda is. And there's a further side to it. The question of democracy is not just politics. It's not just what happens on Parliament Hill or what happens in the Ledge, Victoria, or for that matter at City Hall. Politics and democracy really, to have real substance, involves the sovereignty of the people to basically determine our own destiny. And you can't determine our own destiny as a community, as a city, a municipality, as a province, or certainly as a country, if you don't have any real say or control over economic life. So it's not just a question of politics, it's also a question of what's happening in our offices and factories and plants and mills. What's happening in terms of economic decisions, like, for instance, in NAFTA, which, as we indicated earlier, is kind of like a straitjacket, which preclude Canadians and take away from Canadians our right to truly make sovereign decisions for ourselves. So to truly democratize the system would involve a whole number of reforms, and our party has outlined those in our platform. For instance, we're in favor of reducing the voting age to 16, a whole number of things like this, which would help to make the process a bit more inclusive, a bit fairer. But we see democracy as being a kind of a long-term struggle for the development of a system, really, where the people really have control, where it really is of the people, for the people, and by the people themselves. And we actually think that socialism is the best expression of that.
I'm speaking with Miguel Figueroa of the Communist Party of Canada. Just a couple more questions before we're done. Could you talk a little bit about the spread of candidates across the country? Are you mainly in urban areas only?
Well, in both. We have some candidates running in smaller centers and in rural areas. But for the most part, I think our candidates are mostly in cities. And in most parts of the country, in Quebec and Ontario, we have 10 candidates. We have 21 altogether. Okay. So we're running a limited number of candidates. But we see the election as not just an opportunity to get some votes and field some candidates, but really as an opportunity to express some of our ideas, to talk about the issues facing the country, and to win people for an understanding of the need to struggle. All of human history has really been shaped not by passive expressions like voting, but by people understanding their interests and organizing themselves and fighting for change. The Medicare system in this country was not one just because of the generosity of the Liberal Party, for instance, or even for that matter because of the CCF. It was after decades of working people fighting for their rights, to organize unions, to organize the unemployed, the struggle of women for fuller equality. I shouldn't say full equality because it hasn't been achieved for women, but to at least to begin the fight for the emancipation of women. All of these things are struggles. And so we have a perspective that this election is important, that what people do on January 23rd is important. But we know that the fight for real change is going to continue, and it'll go back into the streets and back into the workplaces and back into the communities. That really is the orientation of our party. We're not a narrow electoralist party. We see politics happening, 724, 365, or whatever.
Yeah.
But we're in election campaign now, and so we're feeling pretty good about our campaign. We have a website. It's www.communist-party.ca. And just in this past few weeks, we've had something like 1.6 million hits on our website. It shows that a lot of people are looking for new alternatives and fundamental alternatives, and they're checking our party out. And that's a good thing. So we're hopeful about the longer term. We're realistic about what we might accomplish in this particular election, but we're feeling pretty good about what's happening. And particularly amongst working class youth, we're seeing a lot of young workers now, especially unorganized workers working in the service sector, working in these malls and getting ripped off and getting thrown out on their ears without any kind of protection at all. There's a new militancy that's growing up among sections of our youth in this country, and it's being reflected in growth for our party. So we're pretty excited about that.
Great. As the leader of the party, what are your strategies up until January 23rd?
Well, we in terms of this particular election campaign, we, are urging people in terms of the best outcome in this election campaign would be to reject both the big business parties, deny both of them or either of them a chance to form a majority government, and to elect the largest possible bloc of progressive MPs, including communists. We don't know if we're actually going to elect, probably won't, but in any case, NDPers, Greens, and so on, but certainly to prevent either of the big bourgeois parties or big business parties from gaining a majority. That said, we're now only less than 2 weeks or 2 weeks away from voting day. And unfortunately, the latest polls indicate that there's a surge for the Tories, and so we want to take this opportunity to say that, punishing the Liberals for their corruption, for their arrogance, for their economic policies, which have been really pro-corporate and neoliberal in character, but to punish the Liberals for that. And then to elect the Tories is like hopping out of the frying pan into the fire. The Tory party is really the most aggressive and reactionary, pro-US, pro-war party in this country. It would be a major setback for them, even for Harper and company, even to form a minority government, much less a majority government. We think that that's the main danger right now. It doesn't mean that we're urging people to vote Liberal by any means, but certainly to help to expose this very crafted and deceptive and deceitful PR job that Harper and his handlers have fashioned for this election campaign, where they're really disguising their true agenda. The degree to which we're trying to strip away like an onion, strip away this superficiality of this image making that has been done by the Tories, to get at what their real essence is and to show how dangerous it is for our country. And there's a few weeks to go. We We're going to do our best to contribute to that.
Miguel Figueroa, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Miguel Figueroa of the Communist Party of Canada.